The week has begun. Welcome to Kinda Funny Games Daily for Monday, September 17th, 2018. I'm one of your hosts, Jared Petty. Happy to be beside my co-host today,
Kat Bailey, editor-in-chief of US Gamer. Hi, Jared.
Hello, Kat. Woo. US Gamer, indeed, that fine news, features, and guides website that I enjoy reading each and every day.
You flatter me, Jared. Thank you very much.
No flattery intended. I really enjoy US Gamer. You guys have had a very... You've evolved through distinctive voices that, and I've enjoyed each of them over the years. US Gamer is one of those sites you just ought to read.
I agree. Like, I'm not going to disagree with that.
How you doing this morning, Kat?
I'm doing wonderfully. I'm ready to talk about some news.
All right, we're going to talk about it then. But first, just a little bit of housekeeping. First, Kat Bailey is here. Go read US Gamer after the show. Second, hey, self-plug, woohoo! Red Dead Radio is supposed to be live already for this week. But guess what? Something went wrong with the render. So it's getting fixed right now, and it'll be up by the time you see this. This Monday afternoon, Red Dead Radio should be live. It's a good episode where we talk about all 23 of the new members of Dutch Vanderlyn's gang. You can find that at reddeadradio.com or on your podcast services or on Hop Lip and
Jump. How many members of the gang does he have? That's a lot of members.
23 total members. Yeah, the gang is really kind of a Robin Hoodish like colony. It's practically Sherwood Forest.
So you had a lot of unpaid interns in there.
Exactly. The part-timers, as Kevin would say. Got the part-timers in there. Kevin's not on board with this. I thought he was going to leap in and make fun of me, but he didn't do it. Kevin, if you refuse to participate, I'm not going to read the names before the emails this time.
What? You want me to make fun of you? I'm getting punished for not mocking you?
Okay, you know what?
I'm just trying to understand what I'm doing wrong, Jared.
Your argument
what
is,
am I doing wrong?
Your argument is logical, Kevin. You win.
I always do.
Today, we're brought to you by MeUndies and Loot Crate, but I'll tell you about that later because now it is time for what is and forever will be... The Roper Report. Time for some news. 8 items.
Oh, Baker's Dozen.
Oh, my goodness. 8 items on the Roper Report today. Extremely exciting. That's a lot of items for a Roper Report.
Way too many.
Item number 1. Nintendo, maybe don't use the wireless NES Switch controllers in tablet mode. This news by Matt Kim of...
US Gamer. Oh my God, you get letting me say my name all the time.
Oh, you got to say that name. It's a good name. You can remember it. USGamer.net. You want to go there. So, it's a really good time to be a fan of retro Nintendo consoles. Not only did Nintendo release the NES and SNES Classic Editions in recent years, including, woohoo, Yoshi's Island. But yesterday, Nintendo announced that the Switch will be getting special wireless NES controllers to play the classic NES games coming to Nintendo Switch Online. Sadly, Nintendo only recommends you use them wirelessly as they are uncomfortable to use in tablet mode.
You know, I'm a total mark, Jared, because I... wasn't planning to get a Nintendo Switch Online subscription, even though I could probably expense it for work. But I'm probably going to do it for that wireless NES controller, even though I have an NES Classic. I am a total mark.
Why are you the mark? Why are you doing this? Why do you want this controller so badly?
I mean, because it's wireless. One on the Nintendo Switch, or sorry, the NES Classic is not wireless. You can get a special third-party version, but I want the original, darn it.
I want the original as well, and it's only available... to those who purchase an online subscription.
That's totally brutal. So so we've been discussing and we're talking about a family plan, but it's so bad because I'm like, okay, well, so I get cloud saves, mm-hmm. right? I get some virtual console games, I suppose. I get online plays that I don't care about. Now let's really quickly talk about the whole tablet thing, really. Okay. Nintendo seems to think that people want to use that kickstand.
Yeah.
I don't... Does anybody use the kickstand? Is there anybody... who uses the kickstand on the Switch?
I have used the kickstand on occasion, particularly when traveling to do fun things like impromptu Karen style with mm-hmm. friends. But generally speaking, if I'm playing NES games, I want to hold it in tablet mode.
Yeah, no, I'm the same way. And I've been at Nintendo events where I've been like, no, I just want to hold it as a traditional handheld mode. And they're like, qua?
Yeah.
You don't want to play with the Pro controller in kickstand mode? Oh, yeah, very much so.
Was that like marketing surprise or real surprise?
I think marketing surprise.
Okay, I wondered about that. It's just like
I've had genuine surprise when I've tried to do that.
Yeah?
Like, yeah, let me just play it like this. And they're like,
but I don't understand, but we have the kickstand mode and the Pro controller, and the Pro controller is better than having the little Joy-Cons on the side. This is better.
Well, let's see what Nintendo has to say about it. According to Nintendo of America, The design of the NES controller is as close as possible to the original, to give NES Nintendo Switch Online games a very authentic feel. As such, the controller's horizontal layout doesn't lend itself to being used while vertically attached to the Nintendo Switch console, Nintendo of America said in a statement. The NES controller works great in docked mode and tabletop mode, and Joy-Con controllers can be used in any mode, the company added. Nintendo doesn't say the NES controllers can't be used vertically, but considering how they're laid out when attached vertically, I can't imagine it'd work very well, even if the NES game accepts the input. And considering NES controllers only work on NES games for the Switch, that's probably a good thing that they can't be used for tablet mode play. Still, if you're a runner who enjoys using difficult control scheme, we'll have an uncomfortable one for you.
I mean, I would just play these games using the traditional handheld mode anyway. I wouldn't bring the NES Classic controller on the road with me. I would leave it at home and play it on my TV as God intended.
Okay, well, that's a good point, too, and it will work great for that, right?
If I really want to play in handheld mode, I'll put it in the kickstand for some unknown reason. Though I really love the idea of putting the NES controller at the bottom of the Switch and then balancing it.
That sounds amazing. Oh, yeah, like one of those awkward Palm Pilot Game Boy things they made for a while.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah,
yes.
Just like balance it on there. And then,
you could find a way to make the flip grip work. Say, full disclosure, former editor-in-chief of US Gamer Jeremy Parrish is working with, I believe, Fangamer on a flip grip so that you can play arcade games on the Switch the correct way. And so you can do kind of a Sega Stack thing with the NES controller and the flip grip and the actual Switch.
And the power base converter on top. Oh, yes! Excellent. I love it. Let's build one of those. That sounds amazing. I need to get a flip grip. Those are Ikaruga for life.
I mean, it's the only way to play like Ikaruga, right? Yeah, I mean, come on. Gorgeous. You're not going to play Punch Out in that kind of style. I'm sorry.
Side by side. No, it's gross.
It's wrong.
It's wrong.
It's not as God intended.
So what I hope we get, I love their releasing the new controllers. I think they're neat. I'm absolutely buying them tomorrow. But what I'm looking forward to is eventually them just giving me a proper D-pad on the left side. A separate Switch controller design so that I can use a generic Nintendo-style D-pad for NES, SNES, anything else I want.
Yeah, the D-pad's not great on the Switch, unfortunately. It's okay. Mm-hmm. I think it's better than a lot of people kind of give it credit for. Mm-hmm. I mean, I played The Messenger for review. Go check out my review on US Gamer. I really love that game. It's a phenomenal 2D platformer in the classic style. And I had no problem with the D-pad, but I know a lot of people don't agree with me.
Yeah, I think why not give us the option? They can probably sell quite a few D-pads if they want to. But right now they're emphasizing this product, and I understand that. I still want to find an answer to whether or not if I buy the Japanese Famicom controller pair, if the microphone on the second controller works and the volume knob. Do you know?
Oh, my God. No, so you could finally play Legend of Zelda the proper way.
Exactly. Shout into it and play it properly. It'd be great. Oh, all right. Number two here on the Roper Report. Nintendo Switch Online NES games can be played offline for up to 7 days. This by Colin Stevens of IGN. Nintendo Switch Online, the paid online service coming to the Nintendo Switch tomorrow, will not require an always-on internet connection to play its included NES downloadable titles. It'll let users play those downloaded games offline for up to 7 days, revealed on the official Nintendo Switch Online FAQ on the Nintendo of America website, as well as Nintendo's UK website. The complimentary NES games that come with the service aren't tethered to an active internet connection. Well, users will naturally need to be online in order to download the games. It'd be amazing if you could do that without it. They wouldn't need to fret about not being able to play these games while on a morning commute or while going camping for the weekend. In the FAQ, the question, can NES Nintendo Switch Online games be played offline, is fielded. It is answered with, yes, these games can be played offline for up to 7 days as long as you have an active Nintendo Switch Online membership. Kat, your thoughts?
Once again, I'm a total mark. I should not care about these games like Mario and baseball and Yoshi being on the Nintendo Switch. In fact, I would prefer that they have, a virtual console where I can download these games a la carte.
And just buy the ones you want?
Yeah. But once again, I'm going to spend $20 a year, or it's $20
a year.
Not a significant amount. Especially compared, but at the same time, it's an amount. Just give me a freaking virtual console, man. And then you look at the stuff that PlayStation Plus has on offer, where you're getting three free games, free real games. I'm sorry, NES games are real.
Yeah.
But also, you can have them on so many different platforms and so many different variations, mm-hmm. and they're not exactly hard to get. Mm-hmm. Whereas I can get, Destiny 2 for free. right?
Yeah.
Through PlayStation Plus, and if I have the thing, the gold subscription, and I download it, it's mine forever.
To be fair, I would rather play. I would definitely rather play Super Dodgeball than Destiny 2. But I think I would rather play NES baseball than Destiny 2, but that's just me.
Ooh, I mean, but this is like a personal thing.
This is a personal thing.
Yeah. But I think that Nintendo I've been a big fan for the most part of how they've done the Nintendo Switch, but I think they've missed the mark a bit when it comes to how they've handled retro games. And this is a thing that goes all the way back to the original Wii. Mm-hmm. They have a truly remarkable library of classic games through so many consoles, and it feels like they should be at the forefront of being able to stream these games through some kind of subscription service.
Yeah.
You give me a subscription service that lets me play, that lets me stream or download NES, SNES, N64, GameCube, Wii games onto my Switch. I mean, that's a no-brainer. Yeah. I'd pay $50 a year for that.
Yeah.
But they just won't give it to me. And all I can think is that Nintendo is making scarcity a thing. Like, they
Nintendo?
They want their
creator
game
of Amiibo? It would make scarcity a thing? NES Classic? What?
They're being so precious with their content.
Yeah.
But I don't think that that's the right move in this regard, and it really just rubs salt into the wound.
No, I'm with you on this. I've long been on Kohler with this. Just give us the games, for crying out loud. We've waited long enough. I probably spent, I think it's easy for me to say that I spent well over $1,000 in Virtual Console.
Oh, me too. I think I've bought Super Mario World at least 4 or 5 times at this point, because I got an NES Classic.
Yeah.
Or Super Mario, I have a SNES Classic. I had it on GBA. I had it on my Wii U. I had it on my Wii. Yeah. I had it even on the friggin' Super Nintendo. How many times can I buy this game over and over and over again? But it works. I'm a mark. I bought it 5 times.
And you're downloading the service again. They've got us. You know what? We've got an email about that. I will go to that later. I'm going to save that for the letter section, but it's actually related to this. Nintendo Switch Online members will get exclusive Splatoon 2 gear. This news by Huron Crier of US Gamer. The Nintendo Switch Online service, which is set to launch worldwide tomorrow on September 18th, has some exclusive in-game rewards to offer. Those who purchase the longest membership plan will be granted some brand new Splatoon 2 items. The new Splatoon 2 gear items are exclusive items for those who purchase a 12-month subscription plan for Nintendo Switch Online. This can either be the standard 12-month subscription plan at $19.99 or the 12-month family subscription plan at $34.99, in which case all 8 family members get a code for the exclusive gear. Well, the Nintendo Switch Online service starts tomorrow on September 18th. You won't actually receive the download code for the exclusive new Splatoon 2 gear until early October. And once again, where's this news from?
US Gamer.
That's right. So
shout out to Huron, who's doing an excellent job. Thank you, Huron.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Huron. All right, so what do we got here? Splatoon content. Do you care?
I do care in the context of this. Next year, there will be a new Pokemon game, Pokemon Gen 8. Mm-hmm. And are you prepared for a world in which a special Pokemon is available only for Nintendo Switch Online subscribers? Yeah. That is going to be an interesting world where it's like, oh yeah, it has a special move and it's a shiny and it's wearing a hat. And, oh, it's a metagame critical.
You're calling it right now.
I'm calling it right now.
Okay, calling your shot.
I'm calling my shot. Game Freak has been doing this for years when it comes to mystery gifts. They've always been distributed free, but it's just a slam dunk.
Yeah.
People are going to do it. They'll complain about it. Yeah. I'll complain about it.
Yeah.
But it's too obvious.
No, it's the same. It's like when Half-Life 2 came out and you had to download Steam to play Half-Life 2. And back then, Steam was crappy and didn't work and just kind of broke.
But you didn't
computer.
Have to subscribe to Steam.
No, you just had to download it. This, you're actually paying them money. Yeah,
yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But, and again, the rate, I think, is reasonable. I feel like longer discussion on this, again, coming up. We'll get to that. Number 4, My Nintendo's Gold Points can pay for your Nintendo Online subscription. This by Adam Bankhurst of IGN. Nintendo has confirmed that My Nintendo Gold Points will be available to be used to purchase a Nintendo Switch Online subscription. As stated on the official Nintendo Switch service FAQ, Gold Points can be used when purchasing a membership in the Nintendo eShop. They cannot be used for auto renewal. Gold points have been able to be used to purchase Nintendo Switch titles in the eShop since March of this year, with 5% of the purchase price on eligible digital purchases, 1% of physical purchases converted into these rewards. Nintendo Switch Online is launching tomorrow, September 18th. It can be purchased in three ways. We've already talked about all of that. Considering the point breakdown, every $59.99 USD digital purchase nets you 300 gold points, which is equal to $3. So one full price game and a little extra secures you a month of Nintendo Switch Online.
So if you buy $400 worth of games for the Nintendo Switch, you're totally going to be able to pay for a month for a year of Nintendo Switch Online. Sounds like a good deal to me. I'm in.
You're in. Yeah, that is $400. That'd be a year, right?
Wouldn't it? Yeah, that would be 1 year worth. So if you're buying $400 worth of games, I don't know how many games that actually is.
That's like one week's releases.
I think that's like six games total.
Yeah. Well, on Switch, that's probably just 1 week of digital releases.
Oh my God. I mean, yeah, no. There's, to be honest, like I probably would buy like six games a year on Switch, but I don't know. I buy a lot of indie games and virtual console games. I would buy two or three full boxed version games. Mm-hmm. I bought Octopath Traveler. I didn't actually get a review code for that one. Okay. So there are a lot of games coming out for it. So you could actually pay for a Nintendo Switch Online service if you are, quote unquote, a heavy user.
That sounds like a drug addiction. Like, and maybe there's some connection to that.
Yeah.
I love my Switch. I love that it's become this weird market. You were talking earlier about Nintendo selling you the same copy of Super Mario World. I'm working on a piece right now for another project about how Nintendo has found a way. For years, they've been selling us the same games over and over. They were always doing that with first party games. Now Nintendo has found a way to sell us other people's games over and over. Switch has become that. That's a thing I'm working on right now.
Maybe they are ahead of the game. We just didn't know it.
They're playing five-dimensional chess. That's right. Tesseract chess. Pre-orders for Persona 3 and 5 Dancing get bonus characters Shinjiro and Akeshi. So Atlus has announced a pair of pre-order bonuses for the upcoming Persona 3 Dancing in Moonlight and Persona 5 Dancing in Starlight that'll be available in day one editions of the two games. Pre-ordering P3 Dancing will nab the character Shinjiro Aragaki, as well as this bonus song, Battle Hymn of the Soul. While pre-ordering P5 Dancing will get you the detective Goro Akechi and his bonus song, Willpower. Yeah, let's see. Of course, pre-orders and day one editions of Persona Endless Night Collection will also come with two bonus characters and songs. The Endless Night Collection packs in the PS4 version of P3 Dancing and P5 Dancing, as well as a remastered version of P4 Dancing All Night. Atlus has also clarified that because the PS Vita version is digital only, anyone that buys the games in the first 2 weeks of release will receive the bonuses based on the respective games that they purchase.
Poor Shinjiro. Totally relegated toward pre-order bonus. Oh my God.
Dun, dun, dun.
And to be perfectly honest, I had to look him up.
You had to look Shinjiro up?
I had to look up Shinjiro. I was like, who the heck is Shinjiro?
You were telling me he's the guy in the beanie. That's
he's in the beanie. Right? Yeah. Taciturn dude in a beanie wearing a red jacket. Kind of like Kanji, but a lot quieter and angry. Persona 3 and Persona 4 have a lot of the one-to-one kind of things going on with the characters, and so I guess he's the Kanji equivalent, but Kanji's a much more interesting character.
Oh yeah, Kanji's way more fun, definitely.
Yeah, for sure. So Shinjiro, I mean, I had totally forgotten. I remember Junpei Iori. I remember Mitsuru. I remember Aegis. I did not remember him. So
well, maybe
that's
why he's
it.
Relegated to the DLC pile, yeah. I guess, or to the pre-order pile. What are your thoughts on this?
More to the point, I don't want to get all message board on here, but I guess that's what I've been all this entire episode has been. I've been message board rant Cat Bailey.
That's great. That's what we brought you in for. You know
what? You brought me on for message board rants. Jeez, I can do that.
Nothing about that editorial expertise, whatever. We want the good stuff. Give us that Reddit. Give us that subreddit.
Put it straight into my veins. That's right. Straight Reddit into my veins.
Just channel that old school NeoGAF right there.
There was a time and a place long ago. I think about Soul Calibur. On the Dreamcast and how much content Soul Calibur had right out of the box. Yeah. And there was a time and a place when Shinjiro would not have been relegated to the pre-order DLC pile. He would have been in the game out of the box along with these other characters, and he's not. And I mean, that's the world we live in now, but I really wish that in a way, I wish we weren't.
Let's talk about a marketing question for a second. There's a phrase that's used in marketing, surprise and delight. You know, surprise and delight our customers. Surprise and delight our customers. The idea behind pre-order bonuses is that they are there to delight customers. Hey, order early before the reviews come out. And when we can go to our bosses a few months ahead of time and say, see, the game's tracking well. And you get something special. So is it a delight? Well, it's always nice to get something extra. But the other side of that coin is all the people who have decided to wait. Wait for reviews. Wait for their friends to give them word of mouth on the game. Wait for their favorite YouTuber to play it so they can watch. Wait for their favorite streamer to play it so they can watch along and see if they like it. And for those people, my question is, there's delight on one side for the pre-order, but is there disappointment for the person that's not going to get this character or be charged extra? What are your thoughts?
To quote a great philosopher, it's a trap. I mean, let's be honest. Yeah, like they're trying to drag you in to pre-ordering the game without sight unseen, without having to read the reviews or anything so that they can guarantee a purchase. Now, games are expensive to make and they need as many revenue streams as possible to be able to continue to justify their creation. But at the same time, it's not customer facing, it's business facing, it's bottom line facing. And maybe if you're a game developer, maybe you shouldn't be thinking always, how can we improve our profit margin? You should be thinking, how do I build loyal fans who are always going to feel like you're doing right by them? And if you do that, then they're going to keep coming back.
The entertainment industry in general has a predictability problem. The fact that we have more control over analytics than we've ever had at any time in human history, the fact that we can literally look into the future by taking some statistics and lay them in a spreadsheet and put them next to others, we can have a pretty good idea, and it's wrong sometimes, of what we think is going to happen. That has made predictability has made business extraordinarily conservative. And when I use the term conservative, I'm talking in terms of going with the safe bet, not in terms of political conservatism. Video games are especially dependent on that because of the way their development cycles work. And
they're so resource intensive.
Yep.
It's ridiculous, the size of the teams, the amount of money that goes into them. But at the same time, look at EA. They had a very bad year last year. This year, they've had a very weird year, kind of a weird and tragic year, to be honest. They have pissed people off to the point that their name is mud. And maybe people will buy their games despite that. But there's a reason that a lot of people are forecasting doom and gloom for Battlefield. And despite the fact that I think Battlefield is their best game by far, it's the most... It's the coolest, it's the most polished, it's the biggest, it's the most interesting. But people are forecasting doom and gloom. Why? Because of the loot boxes last year with Battlefront.
So what do you think the solution is in the industry? How do you think on the business end, on the publisher end, on the developer end, you change
this? Just don't go like completely overboard with don't engage in these business models that are kind of, I want to say, predatory a little bit. I mean, I'm playing NBA 2K. I'm playing NBA 2K despite a lot of things. It is a cool, polished game that really gets me into the culture of the NBA. I love the franchise modes. But I think that its virtual currency system, where I have to decide between buying clothes for my character and being able to stat up because of this arbitrary currency system, is total bunk. I think it's total bunk that I can only play my career online, and that if the second I go offline, all of that goes away. And you know, NBA 2K is always in the top 10, and there are ways to make money without railroading me like this. There are ways to make money off customer loyalty. Kind of Funny is a great example of that. Giant Bomb is a great example of that. People who love your stuff, who love your games, they will pay money into it.
Thank you for that, by the way.
publishers are just thinking, well, they're thinking in terms of marketing executives are thinking in terms of how can we possibly wring every last penny out of a player? And that's unfortunate. I have seen this stuff up close and personal. I've seen it firsthand from people who are not gamers.
Yeah.
Who do not know much of anything about games, but they do have a spreadsheet. They do have a BA. They have a bachelor's in business or a master's in business from somewhere. Mm-hmm. And they know that they need to hit X bottom line. And they're like, I don't care what the gamers are saying. I don't care that they're upset. Put this in. This is proven to work elsewhere.
Well, maybe you raise a really great point in this when you make the comparison to Giant Bomb or Kind of Funny, small businesses like ours that engage with our audiences, communities, and best friends the way that we do. We're here for the long haul. Maybe Mr. MBA is just thinking about his next job, his next promotion, his next thing on his LinkedIn. We live or die with the understanding that this is the long game. How do you instill that kind of thinking into the video games business, Kat?
I mean, I just don't think you can. When I look at a company like EA, not to keep harping on EA, but they're extremely corporate and have been for a long time. And I don't think you can change that culture overnight. Absent, I think it has to be from the top down. And I'm not saying Andrew Wilson should be ousted tomorrow, but I am saying that the right person at the top changes the culture all the way to the bottom levels, and that's how you change a culture. That is how you bring in people who are thinking in terms of how do we help gamers rather than helping your bottom line. Because to be honest, like you look at EA and they're thinking, I don't know how we got from Persona to EA, but maybe this is just a systemic thing. But like EA is thinking, how can we turn everything into Ultimate Team? 2K is thinking, how can we monetize NBA 2K to the absolute hilt? And Persona is thinking, well, we've got these songs and these characters, but rather than putting them straight into the game, maybe we should just make them a pre-order bonus.
Insightful commentary by Kat Bailey. For more, usgamer.com.
Or Reddit. Check out Reddit, too.
Red Dead Redemption 2. 7 locations revealed and detailed by Nick I say his name wrong every time, and it's
Santangelo.
I know. It's something. It's like a tongue twister for me. It's an easy Santangelo. Name to say. Yeah, that's what I always want to say Santangelo, but it's Santangelo. I'm sorry, Nick. We read your news a lot, and I just stumble over a very easy word there. I apologize. Rockstar Games today released new screenshots and artwork of several locations around Red Dead Redemption 2's frontier, cities and towns, the newly released images. Showcase how varied Red Dead Redemption 2's environments are. The images show what it looks like to be in-game facsimiles of real-world locations like the Rocky Mountains, the Great Plains, and New Orleans, complete with the typical Rockstar approach of assigning those locations their own in-game names. Did you look at these, Kat?
Yes, I did. They look to be fictional, much like Rockstar tends to do.
Yeah.
We were trying to find real-life equivalents. Because that is another thing that Rockstar does. My main takeaway from this is that Red Dead Redemption 2 is already an incredibly gorgeous game. The trailers that I've been watching have absolutely blown my mind. The original Red Dead Redemption was great too. Mm-hmm. And I just cannot wait to explore this world because they're already saying, well, yeah, people forget that GTA 5 was actually technically a last generation game. It came out in 2013 on the Xbox 360. Yeah, it was the end of last generation, but they were really pushing the envelope there. Mm-hmm. They've got years of experience and tons of new tools at their disposal. And they've already said that Red Dead Redemption 2 is going to be even bigger than GTA 5. Mm. That's impressive.
Yeah, it is.
And a little terrifying given that I'm not going to have a plane or like a car. I'm going to be riding a horse around. But oh my God, I cannot wait to see this world.
No, I simply can't wait till this is in everybody's hands and we have a chance to just all be sitting here talking about it and telling those water cooler stories that are so much a part of the Rockstar experience.
I can see, we were talking about like, why is Battlefield considered to be in trouble? And one of the reasons is, well, I don't know, Black Ops has a Battle Royale mode. But also Red Dead Redemption is, everybody is just running scared from it. And there's a reason for that, because as soon as it comes out, that's all we're going to be talking about for the next 2 months. And Fallout.
And probably justifiably. Yeah, Fallout's going to be, Fallout's interesting. And
yeah, Fallout's going to be interesting. I can't wait to see that one as well.
I can't either. I know. I run a show about Red Dead. I'm not going to be able to play Fallout and Red Dead at the same time. I thought I was. I can't do it.
Well, I'm probably going to blow through Red Dead's story mm-hmm. in the course. Like, I'm just going to set aside October yeah. for Red Dead. And then hopefully I will be done just in time to pick up Fallout 76.
I'm hoping so. I can't blow through Red Dead. I'm going to play it slow. And again, I've got to, I'll be creating around it. But also, I will be shocked if there's not an online component pretty quickly.
Oh, they're going to have it out of the box with Red Dead.
And once it's there, I just...
It's going to... We don't know much about their online modes.
Not
right?
much. We know it's. We know it exists.
There's we've been leaks heard that, a lot of rumors
not
about
leaks. They put out.
We've heard a lot of
information.
We've heard a lot of rumors about cowboy and Native American battle royale. That would be pretty cool.
I haven't heard about much about that end of things.
It's just a rumor.
Okay, I haven't
at
seen
at the moment,
that one.
But I'd be down for that. I think battle royale is already getting a little overplayed.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't. Actually anticipate playing a ton of online, though it'll be fun to ride out with the rest of my team. And they had online, of course, in the original Red Dead Redemption. That
yeah.
Bugs aside, I remember a horse like going flying into the air.
John Ryan, who's often on Red Dead Radio with me from IGN. Shout out to John Ryan.
He's dope.
Big fan of Red Dead's original online mode. He still plays it. Still works.
Really?
Yeah, still works. And there's still people on the servers.
How populated is it?
Yeah, she says reasonably so.
Oh, I believe it.
I think it's pretty cool.
Well, it's on Xbox One as well now. Does the online still work on the Xbox One?
I think that's where he's playing.
Oh, right on.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think that's where he's playing through.
So that's backwards compatibility done right. I don't think the Xbox One really gets enough credit for how extensive the work that they've done in getting so many games onto the Xbox One. It's been great.
Xbox One backward compatibility buddies right here. I'm going to do the hand slap.
The fact
I know that was lame, by the way. But
let's try again.
Oh, no, I mean just hand slapping in general is lame. But thank you for doing it.
No, wrong.
What would you call it?
High-fiving?
No, we're doing hand slapping.
We're hand slapping
right,
over here.
Sure.
We're hand slapping.
Hand sure, slapping Jerry. Buddies.
Hand slapping, but
that's what we all call it.
Kevin, you want to give me a hand slap?
Never.
You want to give me a hand slap right here?
No.
All right, no hand slap
I'll
from Kevin.
I'll high-five you anytime, though.
All right, hand slapping. That's what we do.
What kind of world do we live in that freaking Microsoft understands backwards compatibility better than Nintendo? I mean, that's the question that
I got. Did
you
get on
that
backward compatibility sale last week?
No, because I have a lot of these games, and I wish that I had time to go back into my backlog more, mm-hmm. but when I do have a spare moment, usually I'm still working through Witcher 3.
Yeah.
One day I will beat it, but there's so much game
there's
there.
There's so much game there. There's no end. No one's ever seen the end of Witcher 3. It's not real.
And I'm only about 10 hours into Dragon Quest XI.
Oh.
There's a lot more hours of that left in my life.
Yes, there are.
And when I don't have, and when that stuff is over here, I'm playing, I don't know, FIFA or something.
Best part of, and you want to keep, 11's great all the way through, but the best part of 11 is the end. Like the post game is my favorite part of the game.
Well, okay. I'll talk to you in 2020 when I finally get around to it.
Anyway, one last thing, just purely self-serving. It's rare in life you have an opportunity that we have an opportunity to just make somebody's day. But hey, if you like podcasts and shows, I run a show about this here Red Dead we were talking about. And we've done 19 episodes now. 19th goes up today. But if you want to like change my life and make things really great for me, do me a favor. Pause for just a second, or when you're done with this show, go to iTunes or Android and subscribe, download the episodes, because we're getting into that place where there's a lot of news now. It's a good show with good info, good guests, and I think you'll like it. You can also go to Hot Blip and a Jump and subscribe there. That's my YouTube channel, youtube.com/HotBlipAndAJump. But if you subscribe on Apple, subscribe on Droid and do that for me. If y'all start downloading that, if everybody watching this downloads that now, you will literally change my life and open up huge opportunities for the things I can make next. So, hey, nobody would ever, you know, only do it if you want to. But if
do
you want to, it would help.
Do it.
Do it.
Please
do.
Yeah.
Do it.
Thanks. Thanks, y'all.
Jared's a nice guy. He deserves it.
So, yeah, and there's so much to talk about now. I just can't. We are moving into that home stretch.
Oh, when it comes out, you're going to have so much to talk about.
Yeah. Because in the early episodes, we talk about possibilities and we talk about news as it comes out. But we've talked a lot about cinematic influences, old Westerns. It's actually been as much a show about old Westerns as anything up to this point. And new Westerns.
Who's your favorite Western director?
Director?
You like spaghetti westerns?
Yeah, I do. But I'm pretty basic on this. I think John Ford's amazing. I think that John Ford uses landscape better than most Western directors do. And despite his very complicated and often frustrating personality, his body of work never ceases to amaze me. It's hard for me to believe that the same person that made Stagecoach made The Man Who Shot Liberty Valance, which is effectively a deconstruction of his entire career. He takes every theme he's ever espoused and then tears it apart in his own movie.
You really love Westerns. Dang.
I love Westerns. Are you a Western person?
I am not.
I love Westerns.
I mean, so I appreciate the genre, but I always felt like it was a little before my time, like the heyday of the Western. But I appreciate, you know, the spaghetti Westerns and that kind of thing.
Yeah, me too.
There have been a lot of amazing movies. I would count There Will Be Blood as a Western.
Oh, absolutely.
Love that movie. But I mean, obviously, the Western as a genre goes back to like the 60s and 70s, particular. Back to the Future 3 is my favorite Western right there.
Okay. You got to come on Red Dead Radio and talk about that. People love that. That comes up again and again on the show. It's amazing.
A good movie.
I hope there's a flying DeLorean in Red Dead 2.
DLC. I hope there's one in a cave somewhere.
Yeah, well, that's something that somebody brought up on Red Dead Radio. I don't know who I'm stealing that from, but one of our listeners sent that in. So, finally, Catherine, full body, second trailer, Japanese limited edition, and first print bonus DLC detailed by Sal Romano of Gamatsu. Atlus has released the second trailer and detailed the Japanese limited edition and first print purchase bonus downloadable content for Catherine Full Body. Additionally, the game's official Japanese website has been updated with new information. So this is from that. The name of the third Catherine added to Catherine Full Body is spelled Catherine with a Q.
I'm going to tell Starbucks that that's how my name is spelled from now on.
You're just going to put the Q on there, Catherine with a Q?
They have a really hard time with my name. Let's put it that way.
Yeah?
Well, my name is Catherine, right, of course, and I do not spell it with an E-R-I-N-E.
Okay.
I spell it with an R-Y-N.
So do you give them Catherine, not Cat?
No, I give him Catherine, yeah.
Okay. Oh, I have been just calling you Cat because I've heard, that's how I've heard name. You introduced.
Okay. Because that's the name that I, it's a boring story, but I was going by Catherine, but my byline is Cat because that was what I was called when I was growing up. And for some reason, it stuck.
Well,
so everybody just kept calling me Cat, and I was like, fine, it's distinctive, but...
I didn't actually know you were a Catherine. I thought you might be Katrina, you might be a Cat.
Nope, I am a Catherine, right. So this game is named after me.
Catherine, indeed.
It is my game right here.
It's a good game.
You think so?
Catherine? I think it is a problematic, interesting game.
I think it's an interesting game in that it explores themes of adulthood, being afraid of adulthood. It definitely has a mini game where you're climbing up a wall being chased by a giant baby.
It does.
Which is, and that's my life to a T right there.
It does. It explores mature themes with genuine maturity in some places. It also explores mature themes through some lenses that I'm not pretty happy or not very happy about.
Saying is that it's basically a Persona game.
Yeah, pretty much.
Which technically in the Persona universe, because a character from Catherine appeared in Persona 3 Portable way back when.
Funny that you should say that. Because this won't be the only time that happens. We now learned that downloadable content lets you play as Persona 5 protagonist Joker in Babel and Coliseum modes. While playing as Joker, the members of the Phantom Thieves will provide commentary, and this downloadable content will also be sold separately at a later date. So, Persona characters here in the new Catherine as well.
I mean, that's not surprising at all because Persona characters are extremely marketable.
Yes.
If you ever go over to Japan, you will see tons of Persona stuff, especially lately Persona 5, but especially also Persona 4. Persona 3 tends to be lost in the mix a little bit. But.
Yeah. The sirens you're hearing are on our end, not yours, listeners. So we're going to wait for those to go by and vamp here for a second. There they go. They're
sitting in silence. You're not vamping.
What's that? I'm not sitting in silence.
Close enough.
Yeah, I'm talking. Oh, wait. Did you mute me?
No.
Oh, okay. I thought I was sitting in silence for a second. I was like, did you have that power?
So I've heard that there's a Persona 3 HD in development.
Can you confirm, really?
No, I can't confirm that.
Oh.
It's just a rumor. Rumor floating around.
Well,
so.
Persona 3 HD would make a lot of sense on Switch, especially, I think. Do you think P4G will ever come to Switch?
Or which game?
P4.
No.
No.
Though I could envision a 1-2 punch of Persona 3 Remaster, Persona 4 Golden, and then maybe Persona 5. Mm-hmm. That would be a tremendous box set. But we'll see.
Incredible.
But from what I've heard, only Persona 3 is in development at the moment.
P3 would be a great one. A lot of people. I hate that P4 was walled off in the Vita Garden, where very few people got to play it.
I played it.
Yeah.
Frankly, a Vita is worth buying just in general. I don't think the price has gone down, unfortunately, because there's actually a surprisingly few number in the wild, because people don't tend not to part with them once they have them. But you get a lot of great PlayStation Portable games, and I like, if you're laughing, the PSP actually had a great library, especially in terms of RPGs.
You are on Vita Island, Kat. This is the friendly home.
Vita Island.
Yes, this is Vita Island. That's a thing.
I wrote a thing for USG being like, hey, actually the Vita was good. I mean, it had a lot of PlayStation games, Final Fantasy 7, 8, and 9. I think Suikoden 2, Xenogears, those kinds of games. Had a lot of PSP games, has a fair number of indies that are really good. And Persona 4 Golden. If you're looking, for some reason, if all of the games coming out on every other platform isn't enough for you, Vita Island.
Yep. We love Vita Island.
Vita Island.
Oh, you sing a song. I like it. Yay, songs. I love songs and dancing. Kat, the PlayStation Vita is a great place to go and play games that came out before. Not a lot of new games coming out for it. But if I wanted to know what games were coming out today,
it's the official list of upcoming software across each and every platform, as listed by the Kind of Funny Games Daily Show hosts each and every weekday. There's so many games coming out today that I can't even keep up with all of them.
Indeed. The reason you can't keep up with all of them is, now, I'm sure that the good folks at kindoffunny.com/you're wrong. are going to come along and let us know what we got wrong, because during the show, they can go to kindoffunny.com/you're wrong and tell us what we did wrong, what we got wrong. I went to our usual haunts. I went to Kotaku, took a look, because they have that wonderfully handy list of games coming out this week. I went to Tiny Cartridge. I went over to Touch Arcade. I went over a couple other places. Near as I can tell, on this planet Earth, there is not a major game being released today.
That's really surprising, given how many games are released per year.
I know. I'm sure I'm wrong.
There's probably some game being released on iTunes right now.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure there are 700 games being released this minute.
I'm sure a really bad asset flipping game is appearing on Steam as we speak.
So please don't send me bad, horrible, third-tier predatory iOS games. Anything significant you might actually notice, please drop that and you're wrong, because I couldn't find anything today. New dates, however. This one from ye old Matt Kim of US Gamer. Rez's creator's trippy new PSVR game, Tetris Effect, set for November release.
I am excited.
That's right. Me too.
That was in my top 10. That was in our top 10 for E3. It looks great. I did play it.
Tell us about it.
I mean, it's an incredible VR experience. It's so chill. I don't like VR at all, actually. I kind of resent VR for a lot of reasons, but
don't say that.
Okay, maybe I don't resent it.
You can say what you want. Don't listen to Kevin.
What? No, we like VR.
I just don't think it's going anywhere.
It hurts.
I think that so many developers who are developing it are just doing little side projects. I don't see a ton of really meaningful experiences on VR yet.
Have you played Firewall at all?
What game?
Firewall.
I don't know what that is.
What's the full name?
So Moss is cool.
It just came out.
Okay.
It looks like CSGO.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. And it plays super well.
So VR makes me motion sick also. I have that problem. But I loved Rez Infinite. I love any game. I love any music heavy game. It is an incredible isolation chamber to listen to music in.
Yeah, I'm going to name my first child Area X.
And Tetris Effect has that, right? Yeah. And I mean, Tetris, obviously, everybody knows Tetris. Everybody knows how to play Tetris. And it works extremely well. And they've added some new mechanics. And forgive me, the exact mechanics escape me, but they do some interesting things with the traditional Tetris formula. Well, and you don't have to have a VR headset to do it. Sorry?
I also played Tetris VR. And when I was playing it initially, I was like, I don't think this adds anything. But like, as things start getting faster and the beats starts going, because like it's the beat is timed to when you do a line or when you get a line, and it just eventually when things are glowing and flowing and the design of the whole like what you're playing will just change. It'll just suddenly be like you'll have like a lava background and all of a sudden it'll be space, but the transition is so cool mm-hmm. and so good. And yeah, once things are moving fast, oh my god, it is immersive. Yeah.
Love it. This excites me.
I mean, this is Mizuguchi we're talking about. Yeah. So
guy's got he's made some good games. I
mean, just a few.
Just a few. Yeah.
I mean, if I'm gonna have a rhythm game and it's being made by Mizuguchi, I'm like, oh yeah, cool. I'm in.
Well, you can be playing it according to Twitter, November 9th.
So, awesome.
US Gamer reports.
I can't wait.
There we go. Reader mail. Before we read this reader mail, I'm going to talk to you for a minute from our sponsors, including MeUndies. MeUndies, that's right. I wear MeUndies.
What?
That's right. I wear MeUndies. So does Greg Miller. As a matter of fact, it's all that he wears. MeUndies are the best underwear. They use a micro
all that he
fabric.
Wears, huh?
Yeah, all that he wears. Yeah. True. I have asked Greg what comes between him and his MeUndies, and he's told me nothing.
Oh, wow.
So,
dang.
I mean, that's all. But yeah, it's all he wears all the time. That's untrue, but it's the only underwear he wears. He wears clothes over it sometimes. Though I do like to imagine that Greg just walks around in his MeUndies quite a bit. These are micromodal fabric, 3 times softer than regular cotton. I couldn't believe how soft these things were. I really couldn't. They are the softest underwear I have ever put upon my body. I know a lot of you probably don't want to think about me in my underwear. Just trust me. They're comfy, and I look great. You can get a matching pair for your partner if you want to. 100% satisfaction guarantee. You're going to love these undies. And if you're not into them for some reason, you could send it back for a full refund. They just launched a brand new membership service, and you can level up your top drawer with new undies each month where members gain access to exclusive prints that no one else can get. They get special member pricing on every product that MeUndies makes, and you can switch styles or skip any month that you want. Underwear is important, Kat.
I agree. Yeah, you're not going to deny that.
So why not get good underwear?
I recommend wearing underwear. Yes.
I recommend wearing underwear. If you're going to wear underwear, why not wear MeUndies? To get your 15% off your first pair, that's 15% off, as well as free shipping and that 100% satisfaction guarantee, you can go to MeUndies.com/gameplay. That's MeUndies, MeUndies.com/gameplay. No, I said gameplay. Let's repeat that. MeUndies.com/gamesdaily. That's MeUndies, MeUndies.com/gamesdaily. MeUndies.com/gamesdaily. Get some really comfy underwear. This episode also sponsored by Loot Crate. Loot Crate indeed. Who doesn't love a good Loot Crate?
People who don't get a lot of Loot Crates in the mail from publishers, like
yeah.
me.
Oh, you said you open up the Loot Crate and you're like, there's stuff in there.
There's stuff in there. Look at all this cool stuff.
People send you things. You're like, yeah. This is wonderful. Who doesn't love getting mail? You like getting mail?
I don't like getting mail.
You don't like getting mail?
I don't like getting mail because it's usually going to be a bill or something.
Who besides Kat doesn't like getting mail, I ask
Or a
you.
Jury summons.
Yeah.
But a Loot Crate is a good thing.
It's a good mail. You get that mail,
it's good
bulky
mail.
And big.
It's
Why
surprise.
Is it good, Kat?
I mean, because it's going to have a lot of surprises and fun things in it, right?
And surprises
fun,
and
fun
things.
Things like Spider-Man and Sonic the Hedgehog and Doom and Metal Gear Solid. I like all of those things.
Exactly. That's this much theme. What is Loot Gaming? It's a monthly subscription box delivered direct to your door with exclusive video game collectibles. That's right. Loot Gaming. Video game collectibles, apparels,
what?
And again, Loot Gaming curates and designs everything themselves. You can't find these items anywhere else. No matter what you want to geek out about, Loot Gaming's for you. They've sold over 30 million Loot Crates already.
Oh my
and that's
God.
Because it's a good product. Our Loot Gaming Crate is a curated collection of items from the best of the video game franchises. Just like you said earlier, Kat, Spider-Man, Sonic, Doom, MGS, and a guaranteed t-shirt in any crate. I would dare say, ladies and gentlemen, that with a Loot Crate every month, that could be 12 t-shirts a year.
Whoa, I mean, I would never have to buy any new clothes again.
That's a rotate, except for undies.
Between MeUndies and the t-shirt from the Loot Crate, I'm all set.
Exactly, it's a good place to be. Loot Gaming also offers 16 other awesome crates, from WWE to anime. That's anime for you kids. Including the next most popular crate. Subscribe now and give yourself a birthday present every month. get excited about the mail. Don't get bills. Don't get things you don't want in the
mail. Don't get jury summons. Just throw that in the garbage. Don't throw that in the garbage, kids. Don't actually throw jury summons in the garbage.
But, ladies and gentlemen, this crate will sell out. You only have until Thursday, September 27th at 9 p.m. to guarantee your order for this crate, or it's gone forever. Once again, that's still Thursday, September 27th at 9 p.m. to guarantee your order. Get the best surprises each month from the largest geek and gaming subscription company. Get out and stay out in style with Loot Gaming. You can subscribe right now by going to lootcrate.com/KFMS and enter the code KFMS to save an exclusive 15% off of your subscription. Subscribe now by going to lootcrate.com/KFMS and enter the code KFMS to save an exclusive 15% off your subscription. Lovely. Time for reader mail. From Anthony.
Thank you, Christ. Thank you so much.
From Anthony. Kevin, I gave you a lot of crap the other day because it was fun. For me. Not for you.
No.
But that's not my MO. My MO is teamwork, partnership, sharing the love with you. Anybody who loans me their truck and helps me move couches, I should never be mean to.
How about that?
Yeah. You were mean to a guy who lent you his truck to help you move couches?
Yes. He also helped carry the couch. He gave up like a Saturday afternoon.
Friend for life.
Yeah. Instead, I was mean to him Friday.
Wow.
He didn't deserve that.
Jared, wow.
He did not deserve the harassment I gave him. The Nintendo Switch Online is launching tomorrow, and my question is this. We always talk about voting with our wallet. I truly believe the Nintendo Switch Online is a bad service. Should I sacrifice playing games like Mario Kart, Splatoon to make a point to Nintendo that this needs to be better than it is? And the fact that it's only $20, mean I shouldn't be complaining so much? I feel like people are just going to buy it because it's so cheap and it's something they're used to by now with PS and Xbox. But by just paying, it'll cause no change. That's Anthony's question. Kat, what do you think?
I don't think the Nintendo Switch Online is a great service. Mm-hmm. And I think that a Switch multiplayer is eminently sacrificable. Unless you're a big Splatoon fan, mm-hmm. in which you're kind of stuck in that regard, unfortunately. You're going to have to play. Though we're really curious to see what that's going to do to the player counts once the service actually comes out. I think Nintendo knows that it's a bad service, which is why they've been trying to heap random things like a wireless NES controller on us and throwing NES games out there that have multiplayer, which is kind of cool. It's just, when I look at it, I don't see the value proposition really. And quote unquote, it is cheap. I mean, great, but it's also on top of all of your other subscription services, which offer a much better value per the money.
And yet, you also told us earlier you're going to buy it.
I'm going to get it because I'm a mark and I want that wireless NES controller. I don't know why. When I sit back and think about it, I'm like, well, I already have an NES Classic, and I don't really want to play these NES games. Why am I getting this? I guess I'm just a habitual consumer. Don't be like me, kids. Don't be a habitual consumer.
I mean, that's the question. We do talk a lot about voting with our wallets here.
But exactly. If we all decided, you know, why are we getting this? Mm-hmm. I'm actually really curious. This is what I'm curious about. I think it'll be fine. I think it'll do well. I'm sure it'll make Nintendo a lot of money. But think about the Switch audience. Yeah, there are a lot of hardcore people, but there are also a lot of people who are not particularly hardcore. And I think the Nintendo Switch Online service is a pretty hard sell to them. Mm-hmm. So how big is this going to be? Like, it's probably going to be limited to a fairly hardcore set of gamers, right?
At the beginning, I think, yes. I think as they roll out more incentive, it may grow.
PlayStation Plus and Xbox Live Gold, that's like essential if you're buying one of those consoles.
Yes.
If you're not getting a PlayStation Plus with an Xbox, with a PS4, what are you doing?
I think that it's very much like what you described earlier. A year from now, when I have to have this to trade Pokemon online, it's going to be a very different story.
What about Smash?
I'm not going to play Smash. Smash has always been bad. Smash is a great game.
Okay.
Smash Online has always been bad. Smash, I love Smash. I've played Smash all the way going back to the N64. Mm-hmm. Smash Online on Wii and Wii U, not good. And fighting game developers who are devoted to that have struggled with latency issues for a long time. Smash is a very twitchy game. Mm-hmm. I just don't envision a scenario where Smash Brothers Ultimate Online play is going to be that good.
Mm.
Now, training Pokemon, you're right. Oh, that's brutal.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to get it for that because the Pokemon online community is vast. And while online battling isn't huge, trading is very huge. Will it be necessary for like the global trade service? I think that is a legitimate question.
I strongly suspect it'll be necessary for the global trade service.
And that's too bad.
I speaking for myself, it is worth $20 a year to me.
Mm-hmm.
It is worth that because my priorities about what I want from it are a little different than yours personally, which makes sense for all of us. I have been for 12 years yelling and grumbling about not being able to play NES games online on an official service. And they finally gave it to me for a reasonable price. So I kind of feel like I have to now.
It is a reason. You don't have to do anything.
I don't have to do anything, but I asked for it. They gave it to me. I like to support financially the release of older games, recontextualize any chance I can get. I'm not crazy about the selection of 20 they're starting with, and I'm less crazy about releasing 3 a month after that.
And they're games that you're buying already again.
Yeah,
I know. Cloud saves are nice.
Cloud saves are nice, and being able to play online. I want to play Super Dodgeball with friends online. I like that.
Well, if they're going to do that, they need to improve the quality of the online services a fair amount. Splatoon 2 has been good, but that's kind of an outlier for the Nintendo online experience. I mean, you look at Mario Kart 8 on the Switch, and the feature set is really not good for the most part.
I also enjoy advantages a lot of people don't. And I think I need to be transparent about that. I mean, this is, it's probably a tax deduction for me, too.
Yeah.
So, yes, I'm paying for it, but I'm not paying quite as much.
We can afford it. When I was in college, $20 a year, even that amount was like, oh, my God, like how much ramen could I get for that?
Yeah, exactly. And money, games are expensive. Games are expensive. I'm in a position where I can afford it. And it's something that I want, not just for the controllers, but for the, again, I specifically want to play those games online and see what comes out later. But yeah, Anthony, I don't think you should ever feel guilty for not buying something because you think it's bad.
No, absolutely not.
Yeah. This one from the delightfully named Harry Nads on Friday. Jerry explained that Final Fantasy VII, IX, X, and more are coming to Switch. More surprisingly, and not covered by KFGD on Friday, they're also coming to Xbox. That's true. This is surprising because lack of JRPGs has arguably been Xbox's Achilles heel this gen. I mean, that's one of many.
Has it been?
It's one of, I think I that's suppose. One of, if
for a certain segment of the population, yes.
I would say if Xbox One was an octopus, it would be one of its Achilles heels.
It wasn't an Achilles heel last generation.
Yeah. This generation, I think, is what he means.
Yeah.
Now this gen, he says. I actually, that's my fault. He does say this gen. Now we're getting the absolute best JRPGs on my favorite platform. Thoughts. You are, in addition to the editor-in-chief of US Gamer, you are the host of Axe of the Blood God.
I am.
And before that, Active Time Babel.
Don't forget Role Players Realm for
and
Game
Role
Pro.
And Role Players Realm. Good Lord. That's right. You did that, too. You have a lot
months.
Of shows about RPGs.
Yeah, I like RPGs. They're kind of a cool genre. And I kid JRPG fans. In fact, I love JRPGs. And they are one of the main reasons that I pick up a system. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, does it have JRPGs? No, then I don't care for the most part. So with Xbox One, they obviously don't have a great history. Xbox doesn't have a great history with Japanese games in general. They've long struggled to make any headway into the Japanese market. And Final Fantasy, I remember when Final Fantasy 13 was announced for the Xbox 360 and everyone and then this generation came along and Japanese developers just went right back to just making games exclusively for the PS4 and maybe for the Switch. I don't think this signals a sea change or anything, but it is really cool to see some of these games. Like, it's not just Final Fantasy 7, 9, and 10. It's Final Fantasy 12, I believe, as well.
Yes.
And also World of Final Fantasy are coming over to the Xbox One. And I think that's great for anybody who only owns an Xbox One. I love that they are getting to play these games. So good on Square Enix. What I am going to criticize Square Enix for is, where the heck's my Final Fantasy 8?
I'm glad you brought that up. I really wanted to ask you about 8. So I am of two minds on this. One is the historical mind. I'm not a huge fan of 8.
What?
But
come on, man.
I want people to be able to play games that I didn't like because it's great to have access to games so we can look back at them, revisit them. Maybe if I played it now, I'd like it.
Maybe.
Do you enjoy it?
Maybe you would have good thoughts this time around.
I felt like I was playing...
Perhaps you would have the correct opinion about this
game. Correct opinion? I felt like I was playing a freaking Saga game. I don't know.
Come on.
Terrible characters, weird mechanics.
It's like a David Lynch film. Well, first of all, yes, it did.
Okay.
David Lynch, it's like a David Lynch film, but in JRPG form. It's so weird and great. I love it. The art is really interesting.
The
world's phenomenal. I mean, you go to the moon and monsters raid down onto the planet. That's awesome. Everything that happens in space is really cool. Triple Triad. Hello.
Triple Triad. But Squall.
Who cares?
He's your main character. You're stuck with him the entire game.
But overall, the cast is actually fairly likable.
Yeah,
Laguna's great.
Yeah.
If you don't like Squall, Laguna's the real protagonist of Final Fantasy VIII.
Well, can we just do a Crisis Core with Final Fantasy VIII and... make Laguna the protagonist?
Because
Zack's way better than Cloud. And...
I actually want to play Final Fantasy VIII again because I haven't played it since probably 2002. And that was when I fell in love with it. In 2002, I played a whole bunch of Final Fantasy games. And 7, I fell off on. And 8, I gained a new appreciation for. Because it's so eminently breakable. It's the first RPG that I ever truly broke. And I loved it. You can scale up and scale down the difficulty as much as you possibly want. It has a phenomenal final battle.
But not by doing a slider, but by getting into the math behind it. And I like crunchy, weird games you can mess with. I really do. My problem with Final Fantasy VIII was
great soundtrack as well.
There was kind of an unintuitive crunchiness.
Yeah.
Now, you're right. That soundtrack is dope.
Well, the thing that was really cool about 8 was after 7 came out, 7 was the most mainstream and accessible of the games.
Yeah.
So Square was clearly going for the broadest audience. And for the follow-up, they were like, what are we going to do? We're going to experiment wildly. We're going to go crazy. And I think people forget that when 8 came out, we hadn't seen a game like this before, with a love story, with these really amazing graphics for the time.
Mm-hmm.
It just felt like they were going on another level when it came to game development. And you can argue with whether they were successful ultimately, but I always respect developers who really take their shot.
Now there, I like that too. I'd rather you go big and fail, which is what I do think Final Fantasy VIII is ultimately.
It goes
really
big.
A noble experiment that didn't quite work out.
And it's a shame. I think that 8 deserves to be revisited by a lot of people who dismissed it early on.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure it has its flaws, but I think it demands re-examination, and the best way to do that is to give it equal time on the Switch and, yes, the Xbox One.
So why isn't it there, I wonder?
Why isn't it there? Well, there are a few reasons. 7 and 9 got PS4 releases, and 8 has not yet. And while 8 has available on Steam, that's a souped-up version of the PC port, I believe.
Yeah.
And so it hasn't gotten the same treatment as 7 and 9. And, I mean, 7, it's somebody observed on Twitter to me that it's kind of the middle child, right?
Is there any licensing around it?
I mean, maybe the song, but 9 had a song as well. They don't want to pay Fei Wong the monies for Eyes on Me, but 7 was the most popular of them, and 9 is the critical favorite.
Yeah,
it's the critical darling. It's the secret best one. It's the one that Hironobu Sakaguchi.
You Bettenhausen! I heard it.
Hironobu Sakaguchi always says that's his favorite one.
9.
9. So 7 and 9 are always the ones that get the most love. And so 8 is stuck there being the awkward middle child, which is too bad.
Yeah. I also love you mentioned the soundtrack. I don't think among my very favorite Final Fantasy tracks is the Chocobo guitar riff. And
well,
eight.
The first
so
moment
good.
When Liberi Fatali starts playing and you're just, oh my God, that opening video, you should just watch it.
Yeah.
It gets me pumped up to play that game every freaking time. And then you're in a weird Battle Academy anime, but that's neither here nor there.
What's your favorite Final Fantasy opening?
My favorite Final Fantasy opening? I mean, it's either that or... when you say Final Fantasy opening, just in general?
Yeah, just whatever. Just pick what you want.
6 or 7.
Yeah.
Because 6 has that just absolutely beautiful rendition of Terra's theme. So much mystery, beautiful. It
in
really
the
gets
arrest.
It
yeah,
gets just, to the point really fast.
Yeah.
And 7 has, of course, the raid on the Mako reactor, and that's just a tremendous opening. After the raid on the Mako reactor, it gets a little slow.
Yeah.
But 6 and 7 for sure. I think 9 is a little underrated because it has that wonderful play.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. And then of course 4. I like fours as well. I mean, but I think if I had to choose, it would be six.
Yeah. I weirdly, because I'd never seen anything like it before when I played it as a kid, and what you see as a kid influences you a lot. When I played one, of all things, after you beat Garland and rescued the princess, that for me as a kid, that had been a couple hours.
That was kind of mind-blowing too, right?
I start crossing the bridge, and then it cuts to the opening credits. And it was the most...
With that great song.
Yeah, that beautiful music starts, and suddenly it's an opening credit sequence with the graphic, and they're looking off, and you realize, oh, wait, this isn't the... This is the beginning. And as a kid, that, like, my head just couldn't get... I was like, this is amazing. I got chills thinking about it.
Well, to your original question, Mr. or Ms. Nads, Mr. Nads, I assume. yeah, it's great that Xbox One... that Final Fantasy is available on the Xbox One, and I am a platform evangelist, or platform agnostic, I suppose, and I am happy to see games appear on every platform, and I think JRPG fans who own an Xbox One and only own an Xbox One should have equal access. Nier Automata came out on the Xbox One earlier this year, which was good to see. I think the Xbox One X is a tremendous platform. I own one. I play games on it whenever possible because it's certainly the most beautiful and the most intense of platforms.
Xbox One X's motto should be the great platform with the stupid name.
That's not a terrible... Okay, fine, whatever. But
that's a really bad name.
Yes, I am very happy. And if you own an Xbox One and you haven't played these games, play them, for God's sake. Final Fantasy 9, 10, 12, they're timeless classics.
Well said. Now it's time to squad up. This one from Caleb Hurley for PSVR. Big Boss 22123. Firewall 0 Hour is a game that works best when players communicate, but many players prefer to stay silent, which can make the game frustrating to play. Perhaps some best friends would like to join me for some Firewall 0 Hour games. This Big Boss 22123. Caleb Hurley looking for Firewall players there in that PSVR. How about that?
Well, maybe I'll join you someday.
Indeed, maybe so. Maybe Cat will join in. Oh, let's find out about...
So Firewall is good. Yeah, that's interesting. I'll have to check this thing out. All right. Well, I've been given the kind of fun, official kind of funny seal of approval on this one.
All right. We're opening up. We're checking you're wrong here. Kind of curious to see what the best friends have come up with today. You're wrong responses. There they are. All right. What do we got here? Let's see. It says Mark of the Ninja Remastered has been given a release date of September 30th, 2018.
Now, there's a game that's really good. Clay Entertainment.
Yes.
Mark of the, that might be quietly Mark Clay Entertainment's best game.
It's my favorite Clay game.
Yeah. Mark of the Ninja is an incredible game.
Yeah. Let people know. What's it like?
It's a ninja game. It's kind of a puzzle platformer that utilizes stealth. It's 2D. Originally came out on the Xbox 360, if I recall correctly. It's great.
Yeah, it reminds me...
Shank was a pure action game, right. And this game required a lot more thought. And it really makes you feel like a ninja.
It does. This one's like kind of like 2D Arkham Asylum in a way, but better. If this had been a Batman
there
game...
There you go, yeah.
If this had been a Batman game, I would have not blinked an eye. Like, it feels like a Batman game.
Man, they should have just stolen that for Arkham.
It
had a digital download version of Arkham, but with Batman. I mean,
they tried. They did a 2D one I think DS, but it didn't work out.
That's too bad.
I think it was, Blackgate? Was that what it was called? Let's see. Final Fantasy VIII is missing, presumably, because of the fact that Square wasn't good about their code, according to Cash. When they partners with Eidos for the FF7 port to PC in 97, Square didn't have the gold master. Eidos had to use an older FF7 build and try to make it work. So maybe the source code slipped through the cracks? That does happen.
That does happen. I think that re-engineering Final Fantasy VIII probably wouldn't be worth it to them, given the amount of money that they would get. But that's just a reason that they should remaster it.
Phantom 0288 points out that Tales of Vesperia 10th Anniversary Edition was announced for PS4 and Switch today. That's great news. Very happy to hear that.
Tales of Vesperia, perhaps the best of the Tales games. I think Berseria is up there as well. Just a lovely little series. Great. If you're just into light, humorous, fun JRPGs, Vesperia is definitely the ticket. And also has a wolf that smokes.
He's smoking
a pipe. I don't know why.
A wolf smoking a pipe. Instant sale.
He's your buddy. Yeah,
I'm in. Yeah, absolutely in. Let's see. Ignacio, I use my kickstand when me and my friends play in their college between classes.
Oh, there you go.
We put it on a table and play around it. Yeah, I've done that some too. No, I've definitely played.
It's hard to hate the kickstand. It's because it does enable multiplayer if you only have one Switch and you want to squeeze in some quick games. I think I played, Puyo Puyo Tetris on a kickstand Switch.
Yeah, when I
great game. Yeah,
so when I was visiting the mental hospital, I would take my Switch with me sometimes, and during breaks I'd go up to the library and kickstand because I was playing Mario Odyssey and I couldn't do half the moves in handheld mode. So there's a time I use.
So if you can get two NES wireless controllers and you put your Switch into the kickstand, you can play Mario in a way that you've never played it before. NES baseball.
Oh, NES baseball is not good. And finally, Kebab says, hand slaps aren't a thing. That was a weak five high five. Aww. Kevin is correct. All right.
Oh, man.
Friends, thank you for enduring this insanity yet again. Thank you for caring about what we do. You give us great jobs that we're able to do every day. Thank you very much, Kat, for being here today.
Thanks for having me.
And once again, that their website you work for and run and operate and all the rest of that is...
Yeah, check us out at usgamer.net. We got a lot of great content up recently. We had a World of Warcraft oral history and also a Spider-Man 2 oral history. And also, our features writer, Katie McCarthy, did a really great retrospective on Killer 7. We do a lot of retrospectives over at USG. And if you're into retro and RPG games, I like to think that we give those particular categories just a little bit of extra love. So,
at a time when people are largely arguing that you can't get away with doing good video game writing on the internet and run a business, you've managed to do it.
Well, I disagree. I think that video game writing is actually better than ever. Mm-hmm. I think that it's more diverse. It's more thoughtful. People are really... That's just a mark of the maturation of the medium itself. Games have gotten smarter, and therefore the writing around them has gotten smarter.
So. I concur. Absolutely. This Tuesday, tomorrow... y'all are stuck with me again, and I'll be joined by IGN's Tina Amini, who will be making her Kind of Funny Games Daily debut. I hope you enjoy the show tomorrow. Thank you for watching today. And until next time, it's been a pleasure to serve you.
Thank you.